WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Coming to you live from Broadcast House. My name is Kevin Tachi, and we are back in the saddle. I will say, I know that you heard the old intro. I'm telling you right now that I've already stripped down that opening to the studs, and we are working on putting new sound cuts. And I almost said, let's do a new one without the gosh darn sound cuts, because I have taken so much nonsense, a little fun ribbing, we'll just call it that, some fun ribbing from a lot of my friends and a lot of the folks who, a lot of my radio besties. I coined a new term, a lot of the South Shore legislators, they're like my South Shore bestie. They're my legislative besties. Speaking of legislative besties, she's probably like the top of the mountain of legislative besties. State Rep Kathy Lenatra here. She's on mic.
Well, hello, Kevin. You know, I was going to give you a little bit of fun ribbing as well, but since you brought it up, I won't mention it for the 100th time, but I'm looking forward to when it's all put together.
Yeah.
Hoping that I have a little soundbite in there.
You might.
Okay.
But everybody and their sister is like, can I make sure I'm in there somewhere. I'm like,
I'm an honorary co-host, though.
You're not honorary.
Oh, I'm a co-host.
You're only a co-host.
So, okay. All
right. So, like, if there's somebody who's going to have, and Josh will be like, well, how come I'm not in there?
Oh, I know.
And Matt's going to be like, and then you get state senators like, you know, Pat O'Connor, like, oh, how come not I'm in there? You know, and then Sue Moran, or, you know.
That's true. That's true.
You know. And
that's true.
You know, and then someone will slip in a sound cut without
as
knowing.
As long as I'm in more than Josh Cutler, then I am good.
Okay. Anyways, she's here to join me. Just a little tease as to who else is going to be on. We are going to have Susan DeCastro, Brockton City Councilor, joining us for a couple of moments after the representative joins me to open up the show. Second hour is kind of like a Plymouth thing. And yeah. Donna Curtin, executive director of the Pilgrim Hall Museum, will join us. New exhibit.
One of my favorite people, Dr. Donna Curtin.
Oh,
love
my
to
God.
Say that name.
One of the
best storyteller there is in the whole U.S. of A.
And loves her history.
Loves her history.
Loves it. So we'll talk with her. And then we can talk a little theater. The Americana Theater Company coming in to talk about Big Fish. Big Fish.
Spire?
At the Spire.
Oh, I love the Spire, too.
Oh, my goodness.
So much to do in Plymouth. So much to do.
Why would you go to... I don't know why
you would go anywhere.
I'm a South Shore guy. Why would you go to another community? But, you know, I will tell you that a couple of weeks ago, we, myself and my missus, Sandy, we went to the Memorial Hall and
yes.
saw Leonid and Friends. Now, we saw them prior to COVID. And they're like this, if you like the band Chicago.
Oh, I do, yes.
And they got a big horn section just like them. But then they got soft rocky on us. It was like, but being in Memorial Hall, fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hung out in Plymouth.
Are we people of a certain age that we're supposed to like soft rock now? Is that what it is?
No, but it's not. No, it's not that. I like all music. I'm very eclectic when it comes to music. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that they what Leonard and friends. Here I am on a rant. What they hung their hat on, and again, this is also. I mean, the performances at Memorial Hall are being promoted here on 95.9 WATD, and not to throw any shade.
No,
but you know the thing was is that of the most, I would say, when we saw them last time. 95% of their content, their musical content, was the band Chicago.
Right? The Big Horns.
And the Big Horns. Yeah, and yeah. They would sneak in a couple of others. But this one, it felt like, because they had a couple of younger singers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were doing, you know, other musical.
Genres.
Yeah, Chaka Khan. I'm like, I don't remember saying I wanted to go see. I like Chaka Khan.
I love Chaka Khan.
But I wouldn't see her for a whole show.
Right.
So they had the younger folks. I think it was to kind of give them a little bit more gravitas on stage, which is okay. But I don't know. I went to go see the Chicago stuff.
I'm sorry.
So no, it's all good. But the point here is that I've had a chance to spend some time in Plymouth this summer, and I plan to spend more.
I do. My family spends a lot of time in Plymouth. We live very close, so we live on the side of Kingston that's close to Plymouth, but there's nowhere else to go. I mean, we have the best restaurants there, the best entertainment, the Spire Memorial Hall, the Museum is Pilgrim Hall Museum. You're going to talk to Dr. Donna Curtin soon. There's so many things to do. The Art Center. Oh, I could go on. Just even the waterfront. And we even have a new restaurant coming where the old Isaac's was.
Right.
And that's going to be amazing when that opens.
My goodness.
I mean, where else can I go? Free concerts during the week.
You know what? There should be a way to have like 30-hour days or...
Right.
You know, yeah, I mean...
There's a lot to do there.
So much to do there. Anyways, you're here with a legislative... How are you doing? How was your summer going? Let's start with that.
Well, I just feel that the summer started last Friday. You know, or last Thursday when it just got warm. And, you know, I'll blink and it'll be over. But it's so far so good. You know, very busy. It's busy with... As I told you, I'm the vice chair of healthcare finance, so we've been really busy with hearings. I have one actually coming up tomorrow, Tuesday. And in the meantime, I've been visiting all the local hospitals, BID in Plymouth, Pembroke Hospital, South Shore, and just talking to the CEOs there and the nursing staff and the physicians and just seeing what's going on there and talking about shortages in healthcare. And, you know, they just see so many mental health issues now in the ER more than they've ever seen. And, you know, very important stuff, Kevin. It's very important stuff. And how are we going to solve this? And do I know the answer? No. But we're working on trying to find some solutions.
What, of the particular committee you mentioned, healthcare finance, what is the purpose of this committee? What are you hoping to find? I mean, how will this all be put into measures or legislation that's going to be helpful to the folks in the Commonwealth?
So there are, as I told you, 7,000 bills filed, right? So all the healthcare bills will go to Healthcare Finance Committee, and that's why we have these scheduled hearings. So we'll go over all the bills, and then we'll put them all together. We'll have hearings. We'll have executive session on that, and we'll vote on those, and that's when we'll start to put omnibus, which we put a bunch together. So they could go anywhere from insurance. Insurance is a big thing. Incentivizing people to go into healthcare, making that more inexpensive, more affordable, right? You know, a lot of people, college is expensive, especially these private schools. So all things to that nature, how hospitals are funded, right? Where is that money going when nurses say they're not getting paid a certain amount? But, you know, you'll hear, like, we have the union members, the union presidents, not union business managers will come to us with bills. And they'll say, but the CEO is being paid millions and millions of dollars, and we're only paying this. Well, is that true? Like, these are things that we want to know. But, you know, they've been through so much over the past 4 years, all our healthcare workers, and what can we do to make things better for them, to keep them in the job, to make them feel appreciated, because that really trickles down on the patient. I just had a friend that went through radiation, and she's actually a nurse. She's been a nurse for a very long time, and she had a party for all her friends that helped her through, and one of the things that she said to her healthcare friends is, I know that you've been through a lot, but just that little smile or just that little acknowledgement to a patient makes a huge difference.
It does.
And at her being a patient, really saw that. And you saw them perk up and say, yeah, but they've been through hell. right? They've been through hell, but they have to remember their patients have too. So it's just a, it's a hard thing right now. It's really stressful on everybody. So whatever we can do.
As of late, over the past, I would say 4 to 6 weeks, and I might, maybe it was, it's been, it's too far along in the process. Has there been any conversation in regards to Compass Medical? Or I know there was another medical group that just all of a sudden just went belly up and kind of left people in the lurch. Has that been something that's been brought to yourself or any of your colleagues
it's
in the
been
house?
Brought, yes, it's definitely been brought to the house and the speaker as well, because that is his bailiwick, is healthcare finance. That was a surprise to wake up that morning, because Compass Medical, is, there's one in Middleborough, and I represent a piece of Middleborough, right. And the piece that I represent is Oak Point, which are retirees, right? So I have a friend, Scott Hokanson. I'm not sure if you know Scott Hokanson, Bravo Insurance. He was amazing, and he came up with a spreadsheet of all these doctors that would accept their insurance that are accepting new patients, and shared that with my office and my other colleagues. So we were able to help place patients because of Scott. That was amazing. So, you know, we're working on that. And why did that happen? These are the things we want to know. Is this going to happen again? So you really, it needs to be a deep dive into the whole healthcare system.
Also, another piece of legislation, or at least a conversation, knowing that we are seeing regular, it's almost a daily thing now, you know, gun violence with either multiple fatalities, people who are, you know, suffering wounds. Is there something on the cusp in regards to gun safety or gun bill that is in the discussion right now?
A gun bill was filed by Chair Day, who's the chair of, Michael Day is the chair of Judiciary, and that was filed last week. And it's 140 pages, so I'm going to tell you that I have printed it out. I have started to look it over. It's a lot to digest, but happy to come back and talk about that once I've really read it and understand it. I know there's a few things in there. Ghost guns, you know, ghost guns are untraceable. People order parts from manufacturers and they put them together and it doesn't have a serial number, so they're not traceable. So, of course, that's in there. And I think training, they've added some more training. The way that I read it so far, and I'm just, again, need to really digest it, is people that have their LTCs now are grandfathered into their training. But people that want to come and get their LTCs, which is their license to carry, are going to be required to have more training. I'm never against training. You know, my border safety bill, I'm always about safety first. So that's going to be very controversial. I've already started receiving emails and phone calls many a day. But again, need to really look it over.
Okay. And again, if you're just tuning in, it's the L&T portion of the show. Lenatra Antachi, the legislative update with Kathy Lenatra, serving the 12th Plymouth District. You know, I bumped into a cohort of yours the other day in I think it was Dollar Tree or Dollar General or General Dollar, whatever.
One of those stores.
One of those stores. And I was teasing them. I'm like, did I see you and State Rep Kathy Lenatra hoisting a trophy? And it looked like a pickleball court in the background. Can you give me some background on this? And she, what you're doing right now is exactly what she did.
Well, the Plymouth
Area
Chamber.
I won't say Amy's name.
Amy Belmore's name. No. So the Plymouth Area Chamber, you know, Amy Naples, the director there, is a dear friend of mine, and I rarely say no to her, as I have with Dancing
Nobody
with
does.
The Stars and a karaoke thing and many other things. But Amy Belmore, who was on the board there, signed herself and myself up for a pickleball tournament. Yes. And we were on the Plymouth Area Chamber team, and we hired our friend, who is now a pickleball, certified pickleball instructor. Down the Cape, he came up. We hired him for a couple lessons. We had lessons with Amy Belmore's parents, who are amazing. And we thought we were at the top of our game. So our first game, we did really well. We won 15-1 against two younger women who have never played, didn't know the rules. We gave them that point, so they didn't get shut out. Second game, we had two older gentlemen enter the court with knee braces, elbow braces, and we looked at each other and we said, no mercy. And when it was 5-0, us being zero, Amy was like, oh, I see how it is to them. And we lost 15-0. But the trophy went to the whole team, because as the whole Plymouth Area Chamber team, we won as a team. So we're taking that as a win.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I thought your newest addiction was golf.
It is. It is, yes. And I do have a golf tournament coming up on the 14th of July at my favorite place, which is this Friday.
This Friday.
Yeah. My gosh, time flies. At Squirrel Run Golf Course, Golf Club. That's one of my favorite places, that in Village Links. Dave Moore, just give him a shout out. He's amazing. Yes, but pickleball is close second. Close second.
Wow.
My mother plays down the Cape. I'm afraid to play her.
So I've done some segments for my other job where we've done some tapings for pickleball, and it's a sport that people take very, and it's all ages, 8 to 88,
mm-hmm.
and you better come with game.
And you need to know the rules.
Yeah.
You need to know rules. Oh, yeah. You need to come with game. That's for sure.
I've got a camera down there with you and Amy squaring off with folks.
Well, you know us both personally, so you know how competitive that we are, and put us together. That's just
you're asking for trouble.
You're asking for trouble, and it's an ugly scene. And we had our own sweatbands, matching sweatbands with our team name on it, and 15-0 we lost.
Yeah,
I don't think I've lost anything that poorly.
That can be humbling.
It was very humbling. It was very humbling.
They got knee braces. They can't be possible.
But I said to them, do you play all day, every day? You know, every day, all day. And they're like, oh, no, only 3 days a week. I'm like, how many games? Oh, you know, 8 or 10. So,
it's
you know.
Almost like every day, yeah.
Yeah.
As we get ready to finish up our segment here, we got a couple mm-hmm. minutes left. And talking local, let's talk local heroes and awards.
Local heroes. So the local heroes is put on by the South Shore Community Action Council, and that is in Plymouth. And this is the second year that Matt Muratori, my colleague from Plymouth, and I had emceed. We're asked to emcee. And this year we had a guest emcee, Senator Susan Moran. And it was wonderful. It's always a great time. It used to be at the 1620 in Plymouth. And the last 2 years, they've changed it to Plymouth Patuxet. And we've had wonderful evenings because it's under a tent. And this year, I was so honored and happy to present two of the awards to two of my friends. Well, there's a lot of my... One is Sharon Collins, part of the Foster Closet, and her colleague. And then the Lady Locker, two wonderful women from Plymouth. So it was a great event. Great people won, and they were well-deserved honors for these people. And fun fact, back in 2017, I was a local hero with my friend Lori Montori. So they took credit for me going into public service that night. They said that was the precipice for me going into public service.
Interesting. So could we have a local lawmaker or a constitutional officer lurking amongst these local hero awards?
You never know. You never know. They're change makers. So let's see.
Probably the final thing I'll ask you is we're still waiting for a budget for fiscal 24.
We still are, yes.
What?
As of Monday, yes.
Do you ever ask, like, just about while you're up at the State House going, what's the deal? We gave this to them like a month ago.
Yeah, we do. And I feel like since I've been in office, I ask the same thing every July.
Same answer?
Same, you know, you have two different, you know, we have the Senate and we have the House, and and sometimes they don't agree, and for them to come to consensus, it takes a little bit. And that is why on July 31st, you know, the clock stops at midnight, but we're, you know, voting till 3-4 o'clock in the morning. That's what we were last year. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is that like? Were you like on, what else are we voting on? You know, and you look up and it's like, oh my God, like, you know.
As you doze off at your desk.
Yeah.
But you really don't, because your colleagues are there and you're talking about things. But in the meantime, we're having hearings every day, which is important to get these bills. As I said, 7,000 bills. You know, we want to get those moving. So it's not like we're sitting here twiddling our thumbs. We're in hearings almost every day, listening to these bills, listening to our constituents. And that's really important. Plus, our constituent services never ends. Never ends. Yeah.
And one last thing, a little, give you a chance to.
You said that was your last thing, so this is your second to last thing, but go ahead. You're my friend.
I fibbed. Did I see you, you sent off a child?
Oh, I did send off a child.
Was that a tearful moment?
No, because she's my third child.
Okay.
So it was not a tearful moment.
Oh, you get the tears out with the first two.
It was only for 2 weeks. So I have one daughter, as you know. I have three sons and one daughter. And Lydia is going to be a senior in high school in September, but has wanted to be a surgeon since she could speak. And she was invited to a doctor apprenticeship camp at Johns Hopkins University.
How proud are you?
Very proud, although, you know, she was very vocal during that time, so we did get a call. but that's Lydia. She had a great time and learned a ton. You know, she met people. She was the only one from Massachusetts. So she met people through throughout the United States. Many that spoke different languages, which really intrigued her because she wants to so badly learn some more languages. She's been doing really well in Spanish, but would like to learn more. And she had a great experience. And she, as you know, was a competitive athlete most of her life, so has traveled and has been is very independent and very, much more structured than I am. So we will see. But now she's home, and now she decided she didn't want to go to John Hopkins, though, after that. Can you believe it? So she wants more of a campus atmosphere.
Really?
I was surprised. I thought she'd be a city girl, but Baltimore, but she doesn't consider that a city.
Now, is there a chance that maybe, is there something locally that she could do? Would she have to travel around across the country somewhere for
school?
Yeah.
I don't know what she'll do. We're looking now. You know, we thought D1, you know, she was doing really well, and then she had that injury that pulled her out, which was heartbreaking to hers, but that took about a year for her to kind of, you know, find her new identity, right? Because that was her identity for so long. But she's an amazing young woman, I have to say. She's an amazing young woman, and we're very proud of her.
Who do you feel she takes more after, you or Mike?
That's a good question. Of course, my husband would say him. But I think her independence comes mostly from me. Yeah, I think her independence and her righteousness, as I want to say, although she's more vocal at a younger age than I was. I didn't find my voice till I was older.
Okay.
And she has found her voice, and I give credit to her coaches, actually, for that. So she's found her voice at a very young age.
You think it's a generational thing? Because I think generationally, I feel that I wasn't able to really find my voice because there was a time where you weren't necessarily
seen and not heard.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. You know, that's a good point. I have 11 interns this session, this summer, and this year they're all women. And what I love about them, one of the things, I love many things about them, and I admire and respect so many things about them, but one of them is they all have a voice.
Yay.
And they, to hear it and their ideas, I may not agree with all their ideas, but to hear it and they're so proud. I love it. That just gives me hope for the future. Oh. Yeah, gives me hope. I love them.
She is State Representative Kathy Lenacci. You've been listening to the L&T segment here on Monday Night Talk. Great way to start off our return back to Monday Night Talk here as we've subjected to you a series of best of Monday Night Talks. But we're back live and in action. Up next, Susan Nicastro, Brockton City Council President. A little bit of an insight as to how the budget process went in the City of Champions, Brockton, Massachusetts. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATV.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATV.
Don't go without a primary care physician. Signature Healthcare is here to support you. There are so many reasons to choose Signature Healthcare for primary and specialty care for you and your family. Signature Healthcare provides trusted referrals to over 17 signature medical specialties and direct access through their medical affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. You'll have access to their retail pharmacy and urgent care centers, providing you full access to your medical records and the ability to request medication refills through their secure patient portal. Most of all, Signature Healthcare helps you stay on top of your health through regular checkups by top quality physicians and staff. Start a relationship with Signature Healthcare today. For an appointment with a Signature Healthcare primary care physician, call 844-SHC-APPT. That's 844-742-2778. Or email appts@signature-healthcare.org. Find out more at signature-healthcare.org.
Friends of the Marshfield Animal Shelter is pleased to announce two free concerts at the Wrexham Beach parking lot on Saturday, July 15th and Saturday, August 12th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. featuring Marshfield's own Leon Street Rockers. A beach parking sticker is not required, so come kick back, relax, and join a musical event that can be enjoyed by all ages. Any donations received will be used to support the Marshfield Animal Shelter and help sick and injured pets on the South Shore. For more information, visit friendsofmarshfieldanimalshelter.org. We hope to see you there.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Yes, you are indeed tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Again, we thank State Rep Kathy Lenatra for being our guest to kick things off. And now we turn our attention to the city of champions, the great city of Brockton. And we have a chance to speak with Council President Susan DeCastro. Council President, Madam President, how are you?
Good evening. I'm well, and you?
I am just Jim Dandy as I can be.
Good.
Last time you and I had a conversation, we were talking about the cusp of the fiscal 24 budget discussions that and hearings that were going to be held by the city council, and ultimately a follow up of a possible vote. You know, I think once you have the hearings. Is it not the FinCom kind of gets a look at it and passes it on to the city council and ultimately there's a vote taken? So that's what we're here to talk about that and maybe some great things that are happening in and around the city that you want to share.
Great. I'd love to. But why don't we start with a great thing that just happened in the city of Brockton?
Let's do that. I know you're excited to talk about it because it's something that isn't necessarily practice around the Commonwealth.
That's right. On Saturday, the Frederick Douglass Neighborhood Association here in Brockton read his very famous speech, The Meeting of the 4th of July for the Negro. And it was an abridged version because I think the actual speech goes on for 4 hours. But we had about 2 hours to read it, and we broke it down by paragraph. And you know, Kevin, of the 351 cities and towns in this Commonwealth, Brockton is the only community that presents this reading in a variety of languages, and that includes, but isn't limited to, Mandarin Chinese, Japanese, French, Portuguese, Spanish, Polish, Lithuanian, Vietnamese, Haitian, Spanish, and English. And it's really exciting to participate in.
And you had a chance. I mean, what was it like to be there firsthand?
Oh, it's wonderful. There's this wonderful energy. And, you know, this speech is not dissimilar to Bruce Springsteen's song, Born in the USA, because Frederick Douglass, master orator and writer, he points out all of the shortcomings. And he points out what the Negro did not have at the time that he delivered the speech more than 100 years ago. And I always get kind of sad and as I reflect on it because some of it is still true today. But it's an important reminder. And we have cable access come and film it, and then we play it for a while. You know, we keep repeating it. It's a wonderful speech, and it's wonderful to remind people.
Indeed. We should never forget our history as to whether, you know, to reminisce about it or not repeat it if possible. Now, I know that we also wanted to talk about some things that are happening this week and beyond. Do we want to talk budget first, or do you want to continue on with what's good in the city of Brockton?
Let me get a couple more good things out.
Okay.
Yep. Unfortunately, the media tends to promote what's not so good in Brockton and telegraph it. And so I'm delighted to share that this Wednesday, July 12th, from 5 to 6, we're going to have a groundbreaking ceremony for our public safety complex. We're putting $100 million into building this huge new building that will house, I believe it's 4 different departments, police and fire, IT and emergency management. It will be at 175 Warren Avenue. It's the beginning of a lot of good things.
Next.
2 days later, on July 14th at 10:30 in the morning, we're going to be spending a lot of millions of dollars to renovate our beautiful War Memorial Building, and we're going to have a kickoff ceremony at that time.
Do we have any idea as to what the renovation, what entails the renovations, or is that still in the works?
I'm sure by now that there is a definite idea. I think one thing that's going into it is air conditioning and also improved sound system, because as beautiful as the auditorium is, the theater there, the sound is really inferior.
Yeah, and I've been there for many events. It's a beautiful building. No doubt about it, but I think with the upgrades, whether it's, you know, if you're in there on a very warm summer day like today was, or like it's been over the past week and a half, you're kind of fanning yourself going, oh my goodness, it's kind of warm in here. And you're right, I've seen performances and have struggled to listen and hear, and so those are two, I think, very much welcomed upgrades. I'm sure that anybody who's been to the War Memorial will be looking forward to once the renovations are finished.
That's right.
So
those are good things coming up.
Excellent. So let's turn our attention to the finances. We know that the fiscal year began. Yeah, I know it began 10 days ago. What was the process like, Madam President, in regards to, you know, putting forth, you know, the budget, you know, the mayor and the CFO puts it forth, and then having the counselors kind of take a look at it and go, I think we need to improve financially in this area. Well, again, all the city council can do is cut. They can't add to anybody's budget, but they can say, this looks a little robust here. Let's cut a little bit off. Let's trim a little off of this. And then, of course, that money, if it's voted accordingly, then it goes back into the general fund.
That's right. And this year, the mayor and his finance department spent months preparing a budget, working with all of the department heads. And they sent it to a printer, and they actually got it to us in a humongous binder on May 31st, which was great. And then we had from that day, it was delivered to us, and we had from that day until Monday, July 12th, when our budget hearings began, to review it, to ask questions. They were available to us. And all of the department heads called all of the city councilors, which I really appreciated, to answer any questions, to offer their help in deciphering what was happening. And, you know, for the past 4 years, we've won awards for our budget book from the Government Finance Officers Association. We've won Distinguished Budget Presentation Awards. It's really a terrific read on, you know, the mayor's take on his department's on the city's goals and accomplishments in the past year and what the goals are for the coming year, and then all of the numbers. It's a really terrific book to read, and not it doesn't require an advanced degree in finance to read. So they got it to us, and the mayor proposed a budget of $554,638,444. Okay? And that was an increase of, I think, $18 million. It was a significant increase. And then we had 4 days from the 12th to the 15th to go over it. And we met with every department head. We asked questions. Follow-up information was sent. And then on Thursday the 15th, we met again. And we proposed and voted reductions. Our reductions were just under $4.3 million, which is the most reductions that we've made in quite a long time.
Do you off the top of your head know were there any significant cuts to any particular department? $4.3 million is a lot of money.
Yes, that's right. Yes, there were. Several years ago, we passed an ordinance to transition from a Board of Health to a Health and Human Services Department, which is really more appropriate for the city form of government. And we passed it, but then we didn't fund it all the way, and we kind of didn't make the changes, hire the personnel that are necessary for a Health and Human Services Department, and we didn't reorganize the different departments that would go under that heading. And so we cut about $850,000 from that department's budget, We funded them for the first quarter of the fiscal year, but we kind of did it as a nudge. Come on, finish this work, and then come back to us, and we will refund the rest of the year. You know, because we want it done. We the city needs it. So that was a huge reduction that we made.
Okay. So ultimately, you were able to, everybody was kind of on agreement as far as making that round of cuts, and then you were able to vote this budget into law, and now it's something that has been enacted in that all the departments are accessing their fiscal 24 budget monies.
That's right. That's right. And then we kind of went at something from a different way. The mayor had proposed an immigration services department staffed by three people. And we all talked about it a lot, and there was a lot of phone calls back and forth. And the feeling was that because it was a new department, we just weren't sure whether fully funding a freestanding department was the way we wanted to go, at least not yet. And so running it by the mayor before we did it, so he would know, we cut the entire amount of money that would fund that new budget, about $353,000 from the budget, with the understanding that we would revisit it after we had actually passed an ordinance creating a department and perhaps fund something that was more modest until we saw results from a department such as this.
Now, was that welcomed by the mayor? Or, I mean, how did the mayor and his staff receive that news and that action?
I think he was very disappointed, but he's working with us. I think he understood. And the week after we made our budget cuts, his administration actually filed an ordinance and an order with a reduced amount of money to fund the department that would be created by the ordinance. So we're on summer session, so everything moves slowly now. Mm. But we will get it done, I think, by the fall.
I have to ask you, how important is it that folks realize, that listeners understand that, you know, the idea of what the city council, working together, you know, as a governing body, it's important that, you know, the city council looks at things with a magnifying glass and a fine-tooth comb. And it's not necessarily about rubber stamping, you know, anything, but it's, you know, and approving it without questioning it and knowing that it could be better by taking such action as removing the funding with the stipulation that there has to be an ordinance, something has to be created first before we're able to actually fund it.
It's really important. And, you know, the mayor doesn't work alone. He's got a staff, and sometimes things don't get filed in the order that they should be. But we have the power of the purse, and we have to take it very seriously, especially in these times with all this additional federal money that we've been awarded as the result of COVID. And, you know, for job stimulus and stuff, that money is not being used to create these departments. But we have to take seriously how our funding is spent.
Dan, if you are just tuning in, we are speaking with Brockton City Council President Susan DeCastro, also representing the great Ward 4 of the city in the south end of the city. And that gives me a little bit of a segue to our final piece of information. The city elections are just right around the corner. Give me your thoughts on the city election.
Well, it's been kind of quiet so far, but we have had quite a few people who have pulled nomination papers, and some have returned them. Right now we have about 10 people running for councilor at large. Three of the four incumbents are running again, the fourth being Rita Mendez, and she was elected to state office last year. We have five people running for mayor, including our incumbent, Robert Sullivan. Excuse me. And then nearly every ward has more than one person running.
Hmm.
Ward 7, Shirley Asak, is so far unopposed, as is Ward 2, Maria Tavares. However, for some reason, I'm not clear what it is, we have a very long time for pulling papers and a deadline to return the papers. So people have until the end of the month to do that, the end of July. It's a long time. Some would say it's too long when you consider it's just a local election, but that's what we're working with this year.
Your thoughts on, you know, it's interesting that it's been, I want to say it might be well over 20 years since it was, there were changes made that the mayor has a two-year term, city council has a two-year term. Do you think we'll ever see a day in our lifetime that there'll be a reversal and maybe there might be a staggering where, you know, you have the mayor having a four-year term and members of the city council have a three- or four-year term?
Yes, I do. And we have approached our state delegation about a home rule petition to change that. It was changed some time ago, about 15, 17 years ago, from a four-year term to a two-year term for the mayor. We would like them all to be, I think, 4 years. It's expensive, and it takes your time away from your job, you know, the position you've been elected to, having to run every 2 years. So I would like to see that happen.
Anything you want to say in closing, Council President?
I want to applaud the work of the Brockton City Council in preparing for and getting our budget approved. It was approved on June 15th, which was really good for us. You know, you have until June 30th to do it. We approved a budget of $550 million. You know, after reductions of $4.3 million, I think we did our jobs well, and I applaud everyone's efforts. And, of course, I also applaud the efforts of the mayor, his finance department, and all of the departments of the city.
Well, again, I always appreciate our conversations and having a chance to inform folks as to what's going on in the city of Brockton. And I want to thank you for being that constant.
Oh, and I thank you for this opportunity, Kevin. I'm really scared when I start doing this every time, and then I just settle in and it's fine. It's a good conversation.
It is a good conversation. Well, you enjoy. We'll talk to you probably in a few weeks as we get close to the fall, just to touch base. Okay. Just to touch base before the onslaught of the city elections.
Sure. That'd be swell.
You got it. All right. There she is, Susan DeCastro, Council President, Ward 4, City Councilor. We are going to step aside. That's it. The first hour is gone. But fear not, hour number two is straight ahead, and we'll kick things off with Donna Curtin from the Pilgrim Hall Museum in Plymouth. So stay tuned. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hey, kids love snow. Kevin Gallerani, 8 years old, winter 1986. Poor Kevin. No snow all winter except March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. It snowed. Real snow. Kevin scrunches together that compressed snowball, dense as an iceberg. Puts it in a freezer next to his red, white, and blue popsicles. He's saving it for the 4th of July patriotic snowball toss. The glorious 4th finally arrives. Kevin launches that glorious ice ball right through the windshield of Dave Gallerati's Jeep. Funny, That's where he scraped off the snow in the first place. Better work on that aim, Kevin.
Windshield broken? Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Looking for a fun, youth-filled South Shore musical before our high schoolers head to college? Come see Grease by Hingham Civic Music Theater, opening Friday, August 4th, for four performances at Hingham Town Hall's Sanborn Auditorium. The hit show is directed by Nathan Fogg. Shows start at 7:30 the first Friday and Saturday night, with an August 12th Saturday night show followed by a closing 2 p.m. Sunday matinee. Advance tickets at hcmt.org. Come enjoy Grease in Hingham's Town Hall Theater.
MS Brockton. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we are back for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Glad to be here with you in this this steamy July weather. This hour, just so you know, I feel it's kind of like exclusively Plymouth. I know earlier in the show we had Representative Kathy Lenatra, who represents Plymouth, but she also represents other parts of the 12th Plymouth District. But later on this hour, we're going to have Nick and Derek from Americana Theater Company talking a little bit about Big Fish. But we are going to right now speak with someone who is a big deal. Her name is Donna Curtin. She is the executive director of the Pilgrim Hall Museum, and she is on from time to time just to kind of keep us up to date with some of the fantastic exhibits and history that is located in one of the oldest, one of the world's oldest world-class museums here, at least in America. Donna, welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and thank you so much for your time.
Well, it's wonderful to be joining you, Kevin. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
No, I have to first be honest with my listeners, and the tip of the cap to Peter Brown. Peter Brown, who is the consummate community person, who knows he is involved with so many things, and he knows who is doing what, and he was the one who was like, you might want to have a conversation with Donna. Donna has a fantastic exhibit that has gone live, and that she is brimming with excitement to talk a little bit about. So before we get into talking about what you're excited about, how are you doing, and how is the season, the opener for the Pilgrim Hall Museum been so far?
Well, I first want to join you in a shout-out to Peter Brown and Tiny Infants. And Peter really represents the best of South Shore community. He's done so much for so many organizations, including Pilgrim Hall Museum. He's just great in the cultural community and social services and Boys and Girls Club and the whole shebang. So thanks to Peter for connecting us up. And our season has been off. You know, I know a lot of people were unhappy that June was so dreary and rainy, but I must say that's what we call museum weather, and it really has brought a lot of people to our door this season. So we're feeling we're back in action in a way maybe that we haven't been for a couple of years now. And we've held the line on our admission prices too, Kevin. You know, we know people are feeling the pinch here and there. We really want to make certain that our doors are open and available to people. So we try to keep our price point as modest as we can for folks to come down and visit, really, as you say, a world-class little treasure house of history here on the South Shore.
Does it feel as though that this particular year, 2023, that we're not as cautious as we have been the past couple of years because we have been dealing with a pandemic and making sure we're not getting sick? Does it feel as though things have returned to normal, business as usual, sharing information and the history of America's hometown and the pilgrims? Does it feel different?
I think there's a lot more ease in the way the public is going out and venturing forth into our beautiful, you know, local South Shore towns and businesses and restaurants. I think there's a lot more ease, and that's a good thing. But, you know, you're asking a historian a complex question when you ask something like that. So there are always, you know, what do we know about trends that are happening right now? I know some of our colleagues in travel tourism, Lee Filson and the C. Plymouth folks who do the whole county area, look at that sort of data and trends to see what's happening with folks. But, you know, we're still, I think, in those ages where our patterns were really disrupted and we don't quite know how they're going to settle. But things do seem to be coming back. People do seem to be going out, and especially locally. We're seeing more local residents, and I mean local as in, you know, our region. People, we get a lot of people from Marshfield. You know, I haven't met so many people from Marshfield, I don't think, for a few years. Coming down, and they're looking for something to do in the area that's just, you know, a little day trip, a little venture out to do a couple of enjoyable things. And sometimes the museum is on their list, and we want certainly to encourage that because we think there's lots of really cool things that people will enjoy seeing here.
I know the mission of the Pilgrim Society and also the Pilgrim Home Museum is to try to get the word out about the pilgrims and their significance, raise awareness. How has that mission been to date, and what strides is the Pilgrim Home Museum doing to kind of get the word out as to the importance of the pilgrims and their landing here in America?
Well, that founding mission was one that was crafted 200 years ago. Our organization was founded, well, actually, it's over 200 years ago now. We were founded in 1820, so we're 203 years old as an organization. And what we found is over the years that mission has, you know, deepened over time. And to me, this is really exciting. And I think it's also engaging to other people to think, we look at the pilgrims, we look at what we know about these English settlers that came over in 1620 to establish a new home here, and we know a lot about them as individuals. It's a human story, and I think it's something that people can connect with when they think about, hey, a family did this thing. They came here, they encountered some hardships, this is how they resolved some of the difficulties that they faced, and this is what ended up happening to them. But we also now always place that in the context of the land that they came to, which was occupied and lived in for thousands of years by the indigenous people. And back 200 years ago, that was part of the story people left out. And now we're weaving that in as closely connected and tightly as we can, so that people can understand that history doesn't happen just from one set of eyes. It happens from the point of view of everybody who's experiencing it. So we're trying to weave those threads in a way that people get a more holistic and complete understanding of the past. And we found that to be a very fulfilling way of approaching this 200-year-old mission, and it brings us into partnerships with many groups, including members of the Mashpee and Quinnawampanoag tribe and other indigenous peoples, as well as the descendants of the Mayflower Pilgrims who arrived in 1620, and many of those genealogy groups, other people who are interested in tracing the roots. So we're trying to bring it together, and that is actually was sort of the inspiration for our new exhibit, which just is opening today.
Wow, that's like a segue right there for the exhibit called Real/Mythic People of Early Plymouth. Is that accurate?
That is the title indeed, yes.
Wow. Now, whose job was it to pick the title?
Oh, my gosh. Well, there's a number of different heads that sit at the table, okay. And we, you know, we might ask you sometime, Kevin, or some of your listeners to help us craft good titles. But we wanted to express that, you know, when we think about history, there's documentation, there are records we look at. Historians are cautious people. They like to have, you know, good documentation. They like to be able to craft arguments about the past that they can go back and say, well, this is my source for this piece of information. But over time, our histories become inherited, they become more tradition, and, you know, we have layers of myth and legend that creep in, and the pilgrims are absolutely a case in point. That's an old history, but what a lot of people understand about the pilgrims might be a few facts that they learned in grade school, or not facts, you know, stories that weren't quite rooted in historical record about the pilgrims, you know, that they wore funny buckles on their hats or, you know, whatever the story might be. So we wanted to tease apart some of the, you know, the misperception that happens over time about the past, and look at the stories, look at what we know about the actual people that were here. So we have some objects that represent different individuals. We have some other types of presentations. We have a wonderful series of mini films that sort of articulate the voices of people in the past, and we try to base that as much as we can on actual primary source records. But that's the idea, is to get people really kind of just connecting through the mists of time with the real lives of people who lived in our area before.
If you're just tuning in, we're very fortunate to be speaking with Donna Curtin. She is the executive director of the Pilgrim Hall Museum, located in downtown Plymouth. And you may hear me say this a few times. It's, if you haven't had a chance to explore downtown Plymouth, grab yourself something to eat. There's some great eateries, and even learn a little bit about our history, American history. Stop by the Pilgrim Hall Museum. Make a day of it. And, you know, whether it's, you know, to find out about this new exhibit or some of the collections they may have, you will not go wrong. As Donna, I think, so aptly put it, is that, you know, there's a lot of misnomers, or there might be, you know, some of the perceptions as to our, you know, founding fathers, the folks who landed here. You know, it's something that still is, I think it's a fluid situation as we're learning more and more. Is that correct, Donna, when it comes to the original, the folks who came here from England?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, in recent years, there's been a lot of new research that's come out. Sometimes it's just tracing the history. For example, some of the women of the colony. Women are really hard to trace through time because they change their names when they marry, so it's harder to trace them sometimes. But there's been a lot of wonderful research about some of these individual English women that came on the Mayflower and on later ships as well. And also for Wampanoag women, and in general as well, the population in general, not just the women's history perspective, but there have been some very diligent scholars who've been digging away in the archives and coming up with bringing to light pieces of information or documents that haven't been seen in a long time. And one of the documents that we have on display in the new exhibit is actually, you know, this is my area. I'm a historian, so I love old paper. I love these old manuscripts. They're, you know, written by hand by someone with a quill pen and on beautiful paper. And we have a fragment of paper. It's probably about 4 inches by 3 inches, tiny little fragment of paper. And the handwriting is just this tiny little hint. And you're like, how could someone use a feather pen, a quill pen, so beautifully? Tiny little words going across the page. And it was written by Governor William Bradford of Plymouth Colony.
Goodness.
His journal is so famous. It's the one that's up at the State Library in Boston. It's in a vault. They only have a copy of it out on display. But we had permission from the collection of the Massachusetts Historical Society to bring another tiny fragment that Bradford wrote himself. It's called A Portion of the First Dialogue. And when he was older, and that by that I mean he was in his 50s, he decided he wanted to talk to the generation coming up. And so he wrote down some notes about what he wanted them to understand about what he had lived through, his years of persecution in England for his religious beliefs, and then going into Holland and having a very hard time being in a foreign land, as he put it. And so he writes this little tiny, tiny paragraph on this paper, and he says, you know, that their sufferings, that what he and his companions looked through, would make your hearts ache to learn about. And I just think that's so moving to look at this expression that was written now almost 400 years ago. And that's one of the very special things that we have for a limited time here at the museum until this September, that people can come down and see. It's just very powerful.
It's interesting you say that, because the next thing I was going to inform our audience is that this particular exhibit is going to mutate, and is some of the things that are there now may not be there if you wait until October. There's going to be changes that'll be taking place from time to time. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely. Partly because the fragility of some of these special things that are coming in to the show, and so you can really only have them exposed. We actually have very special lighting, and there's a button you have to press to see the Bradford document, and only gives you a few seconds to look at it, that kind of thing, just because they're so delicate. But they can't stay on long-term exhibits, so we get them for a few months to be here, and we want as many people as possible. You're not going to have an opportunity to see a Bradford document up close like this probably for a long time.
now, what is the process if folks want to, let's say they want to come, whether it's a couple or maybe it's a group, what's the best way? Do they have to purchase tickets? Should they call in advance?
You know, you don't have to. And, you know, I think so many people these days, when they're thinking about having a nice outing like you were describing before, hey, you know, maybe we'll go down to visit Plymouth for the day. We go out to lunch. Yep. We'll walk around and see the sights. And so you can be completely ad hoc. You can come to the door and buy a ticket. If you are a planner and you want to plan, you can go online. You can get it. The tickets are timed tickets, but the time is very flexible. So, you know, if you buy a 2 o'clock ticket, you can come in at 3 o'clock, that sort of thing. So, you know, we want it to be easy and comfortable for people to come see us at any time. So really, just come to the door. Come when you have a chance. When, you know, it's one of those nice days. It's not too hot. It's not too lousy, or maybe it is too hot and too lousy, and you want to be in a nice climate-controlled environment and have a chance to relax and see some cool things and go to lunch. Or maybe go to a show that evening.
Right, exactly. But you know what? You should make it. It should be one of the things that are on the itinerary to do if you are going to visit America's hometown. And again, the Pilgrim Hall Museum website is pilgrimhall.org. Oh, my God, that is so easy. And also, if you want to plug, you want to plug it into, you know, if you need to, get from point A to point B and put it in your Google Maps. It's 75 Court Street. Phone number, if you need more information beyond what we're saying and you're not finding it on the website, 508-746-1620. Now, we have a few more minutes here with Donna Curtin, the executive director of the Pilgrim Hall Museum. I want to give you a couple of moments to talk a little bit about your lecture series. I know the next one may not be coming up for about a month, but can we talk a little bit about some of the folks that come and speak and share their wisdom?
Well, yeah, we're so fortunate. We had a great speaker series this year, thanks to Northeastern Bank and Brabo Insurance sponsored this, so we can invite the public to come for free and sit in on these wonderful evening lectures. So we've had a number of them. We've had Wampanoag history. We have Pilgrim history. We have environmental history. The next one coming up is Wednesday, August 2nd, 6:30 p.m. We have some refreshments, and the lecture starts right at 7. That's the case for all the lectures in the series. And we have some wonderful Wampanoag historians. We were talking a little bit about some, you know, how new information comes to light. Well, Lisa Brooks is a scholar who's written a number of books about Wampanoag history on the South Shore area here, about King Philip's War, and about just sort of the life of Indigenous people in this region. And she and several other scholars are going to be doing a panel discussion on what our history, what Plymouth Colony history looks like from the view of the Wampanoag coast, all up and down the eastern seaboard, the Wampanoag people that lived here. What did this colonial history look like through their lens? And they're doing this by looking at some of those early historical narratives and accounts that we have, our primary sources that were written from the perspective of the English colonists. But those sources are now being looked at in a different way, from a, you know, sort of, you know, do the 360 view. And I think it's going to be really fascinating. And that's on August 2nd. And we have a wonderful Mayflower genealogist coming in September. A scholar of Puritan religions will be coming to us in November. And we have a local architect looking at all kinds of interesting architecture, this wonderful sort of 19th century estate in Plymouth in October. So there's a lot of different things coming up, and these are absolutely free. We do ask you make a reservation online through our website, pilgrimhall.org, just so we make sure we have a seat for you, because we do sometimes fill up.
I do want to end you speaking online here, and I didn't realize this until, you know, doing a little research, but I didn't realize that you guys actually have online exhibits. Is that true?
Well, we have a lot of information loaded onto our website, and it's actually being redesigned, so
okay,
we can be a little bit more visual with online exhibits going forward in the future. But there is a tremendous amount of content on all different kinds of topics. We don't just do pilgrim history. We do the history right up almost to not quite the present time, but definitely to the 20th century, and even, you know, into the early 21st century. We are a historical museum, so history doesn't stop, right? It keeps
keeps telling the story. Yep. And again, you know, our primary conversation is about getting, you know, foot traffic into Pilgrim Hall Museum, and talking a little bit about the real / mythic people of early Plymouth, the ongoing exhibit that'll take place right up until the first Saturday of December, just as you're closing for the season. This is a temporary. Could we talk at least for a moment as far as some of the permanent items that are there that maybe folks never knew?
I think people are very impressed, you know, especially some of our locals who haven't, you know, stepped over the threshold here, but, you know, sort of have a sense of, whoa, there's that building with the big granite columns right as I'm driving into Plymouth. What is that thing? And when they walk through, I think they're just astonished. We have the oldest state document in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That was the patent that gave the Mayflower Pilgrims permission to be here in Plymouth. They, remember, were headed a little further south, and they ended up here a little bit by mistake. So we have some of the earliest furnishings made in British colonial America, some of the first American-made pieces of furniture, and they're beautifully carved heavy oak. We have documents and papers, including a deed with the signature of the Massasoit, Usamequin, who was the leader of the Pokanoket Wampanoag people, and also a very significant regional leader among the Wampanoag people of the coast here. Just, you know, every corner, monumental artworks that tell this story, and embroideries that we have a wonderful artist and a group of stitchers making these embroideries. We started them for the 400th anniversary, that tell the story of Plymouth through that wonderful needlework. So it's just a tremendous range and variety of wonderful artifacts, historical, artistic, to help people understand the place where they live.
Well, we just got a couple of moments left with you. So sad, it's almost over. But it doesn't mean that we can't have more conversations down the road. Anything that we haven't mentioned or touched upon, but you want to take a moment to at least share with our audience?
Well, I will just let people have this thought. When they come down to Plymouth, and this is true of many of our wonderful towns on the South Shore. I'm a South Shore native. I grew up here, and I just think we live in the best part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That can be imagined. But when you come to Plymouth, especially, and you're walking on our waterfront, or you're going up and exploring the downtown, which has just got so much to offer, you're really, every footfall, you're on historic ground. So venture a little bit, you know, go up onto the old burying ground. You get the best view of Plymouth Harbor and its Long Beach. And you're there right in the midst of these wonderful ancient grave markers, and you're connected to history. You're connected with the beauty of this landscape that we have right here in our backyard. So don't be afraid to, you know, walk about a bit.
And again, just a reminder, you can always check the website, pilgrimhall.org. Also, that they're located, again, downtown Plymouth. It's that easy, 75... oh, I just lost it. I had it a second.
Court Street.
Court Street, 75 Court Street. Phone number, if you're going to call, again, the next lecture series, I believe she said it was August 2nd. Is that correct?
That's right.
August 2nd. If you limited seating, you want to reserve in advance, 508-746-1620. It's very clever, 1620, right? Keep that in mind. And make a day of it if you are going to head down to Plymouth and stop by. Probably one of the unique, coolest, and flush with information when it comes to our ancestors, those who landed here, and knowing that this organization is doing its best on a daily basis to bring you the latest information as it's learned, as it's researched, and it's through its exhibits, it's being shared. Dawn, I want to thank you again for being my guest and sharing this information with folks so they can plan accordingly.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
You got it. There she is, Donna Curtin, our guest. We are going to step aside just for a couple of moments, but when we come back, we're going to speak with the folks from Americana Theater Company, talk a little bit about a big fish that's going to be landing this Thursday at the Spire Center. Stay tuned. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for the final segment of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Glad to be back in the big seats as we've been providing you best of programs for the past couple of weeks as we caught our breath. But we're going to finish up big this evening as we have a chance to talk with some folks from the Americana Theater Company. Actually, Derek has been here previously. The other gentleman, actually, he is in the feature role as coming up. We have a captivating musical called Big Fish. And this is going to be starting, I think, this coming week, later this week, July 13th. Runs right to the 30th. And we're lucky enough to have Derek Martin, who is here. He is the show director. And he is the founder of the Americana Theater Company. We'll first say hi to you, Derek. How are you, Derek?
I'm doing great. Great to see you, Kevin. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
That's
because
right.
Because we had a conversation previously talking about a production. Who have you brought with us today? I believe you have brought Nick Hancock with us.
That is right. Nick Hancock, who is actually, we've known each other for a little while here. He's actually one of my former students. And he's an excellent actor, and so we brought him out from California.
Wow. did I see something about, like, Sacramento?
That is correct.
Wow. Well, Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself, and welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me here. As Derek said, I was one of his students, so if he says I'm a good actor, he's also saying that he's a good teacher. So.
That's right.
I've done a couple of productions with Americana before. I'm super excited to be back. It's a great place to be and a great place to work. So,
what is it about theater, guys, that you like being involved with, whether it's somebody who is behind the scenes and pulling everything together for that moment when the curtain goes up, or being, you know, one of the lead individuals that someone is following throughout a storyline? We'll start with you, Derek.
Sounds great. The thing I like about theater is that, first of all, it's multiple art forms pulled into one. Like, we have lighting design, you have painting and set, and then you have acting, singing, dancing. It's all kind of a unified art form in and of itself. And I also just like telling stories. I mean, I think people, we see in the audiences, people really connect with the stories. and it moves them. And that's the most amazing thing to me, is you share live, you're sharing something that is gone. Mm. You know, the second we're done with that, that audience got that one performance that no other audience is really going to get. Even though we're saying the same lines, mm-hmm. it's unique to that night, that particular night. So that's what I like about theater.
How about you, Dick?
Yeah, kind of piggybacking off of that, the type of storytelling that you can tell is really unique. Obviously, I'm a musical nerd, so getting to sing and dance is really, really fun. You can really elevate things and do things that just doesn't really happen in movies or TV shows as often. But kind of like Derek was saying, you really, each show and each cast that you do, even if it's a show that you've done before, it's a very unique performance every time, because human beings are just weird and different, and they bring different things to every production. So even night to night, we've noticed that the show is different, and it keeps it fresh and fun for us, so that we feel like we're discovering a new story every time.
So here we are. I think, if I'm correct, theater-wise, we are technically on the... right around Tech Week, I think, is happening right about now. This is where you're tweaking the lights, make sure all the costumes, everything is just right. You might do a couple of rehearsals, but they're, you know, it's, you're going from stem to stern without stopping. Whoa, right?
Yeah, it's we're in full gear. We've been doing runs, and we've been adding in set pieces and marking things on the stage. It's getting crazier. It's like every day we add a new step, it feels like.
I'm picking up the lighting designer later tomorrow to be able to bring her in, and we're setting the lights. We're going, that's where we are right now. So, yeah, running it all.
And this is going to be at the Spire in downtown Plymouth.
Absolutely.
A very quaint, cozy space. What has it been like to do a production like Big Fish at the Spire?
It's interesting, because it's usually a music venue, we have to do some creative things in order to fit the set, and sometimes backstage to fit the actors, and just getting them to do costume changes. For instance, we have one costume change that all 15 actors have to be doing a costume change within about less than a minute. So it's a real quick change with every actor on stage. And so it's unique to be at the Spire to do that. However, the history of the Spire, the incredible sound they have, the great lighting they have, everybody knows it. It's right on Court Street. It's one of the most fun venues I've ever performed in. And the creativity is what I think makes it come alive. And you will absolutely get to see some of that fun stuff.
What's your dick? What has it been like, kind of from blocking right up into, you know, rehearsing your different scenes? What has it been like in this space? Is this one of the most unique spaces that you have gotten ready for performances today?
Yeah, it's definitely, it's not like many other spaces I performed in. You can definitely feel there's a history in the building, and the stage itself, it's mostly for music venues, but it is a beautiful stage. I mean, if you've ever been there, there's like stained glass windows on either side, mm-hmm. and it's like a huge church-looking archway, so it's so beautiful, and we can really fill it up, too. It's like a small, quaintish little place, but when the house is full, it feels like a nice, good full house. So I've enjoyed it. I've gotten to perform there a couple of times, and I'm super excited to get to try and do it again.
So let me ask you this. So how many different productions have you done here in the New England area? Have you done quite a few?
I've done a good number. They've been with Americana mostly. I, as a freshman, came out here as an intern, running, getting coffee and whatever else they needed me to do.
Sure.
But I got the opportunity to perform even that time. And so that was back in 2017, 2018, something like that. So I've gotten to perform here almost every year
prior
since
to COVID.
Then. Yeah, I think they had 1 year where they went dark, but after that they kept kicking and have been doing shows pretty much ever since.
Derek, what has it been like since? I mean, it almost feels like this year is the first full year where we're not worried about, you got to put a mask on, or we check your card to make sure you have your shots. I mean, what has it been like for theater to this point in 23?
That's a really, really good and slightly loaded question, because theater kind of took everyone took a hit. It was the year that shall not be named, you know?
Oh, brother.
And I think in theater in general is just getting, even if you look in Boston, New York, theater is just getting back into normal. you know, some semblance of normalcy. And so it was really interesting. I felt like the year or two after COVID, we did Clue, and it exploded. Like, it was like everyone came that wanted to, everyone wanted to get out of the house. And so since then, it's been kind of normalizing again, finally. And it does, like, much like you said, it feels like the first year where things feel similar to how it felt a little bit pre-COVID. You know, there hasn't been as many questions on the phone. So that's been a huge, huge blessing. Actors are really excited to get out there and actually do their thing again, because for a year, I don't even know. I mean, everybody stopped, but it really did affect the performing arts industry tremendously. But we weathered it. So that's good.
Now, how did you hold up? I mean, you, again, 2017, 2018, and then having, you know, early 2020, things kind of grind to a halt. Do you scratch your head and go, oh my goodness, what do I do now? Did you think about, are you originally from California, or where are you originally from?
Yeah, so I'm born and raised in California.
Fantastic.
Sacramento area. And yeah, when the pandemic hit, I was just graduating from college, getting my degree. So I had a degree and I had nothing to do with it. I drove for, delivered packages for a good like year during the pandemic. But I took, you know, small gigs where I could, and eventually things slowly started opening up. I did a couple of shows with Sacramento Theater Company, and it was, they like did little cabarets, and then they started to do bigger concerts, and now they're back to doing full productions and musicals like a lot of other places. But it definitely halted for a while, and for a minute I was like, did I just spend 4 years on a degree that is not going to be of any use?
Right.
But thankfully, things have started to open up again, both on California's coast as well as out here. So
now, do you travel back and forth, or do you live here in Massachusetts?
I travel back and forth. So for the last couple of summers, I'll come out here somewhere between halfway through June, beginning of July, depending on when their season starts, and then I'll work through with them through the season. Maybe stay an extra week or two to get a little vacationing in, and then I'm back to California where I try to do the same thing over there.
Oh, God bless you. Wow. God bless you. That's the voice of Nick Hancock. And also, we have Derek, who is here. Derek Martin, show director, also founder of the Americana Theater Company. Talk to me about choosing Big Fish. And kind of give us for folks who don't know, the background to the story of Big Fish.
Yeah, Big Fish is such an interesting piece. People might remember, I say might, there was a movie in the early 2000s.
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton's movie, Big Fish. So it's a really unique piece. It's a father and son story, really, about the father and son not being able to communicate. The father speaks almost in tall tales or Big Fish stories, which is where the title comes from, is all his Big Fish stories. And the son's a literalist, you know. I mean, he can't see, you know. I think there's a line that Edward says about, I would hate to see rainbows in your world. They're probably all gray, you know. It's a great line. But it's about them going through some tragedy and how they reconcile the relationship. And so for us, when we're looking at stories, what we're choosing to pick, we always want something that kind of, our log line is stories that entertain and stories that matter. That's one of our big things. So we look for shows that are both fun and entertaining, but also hit at the heartstrings. That's kind of why we started looking at this one. It's a beautiful story, great music. And also, it goes to so many different weird places. Everyone knows the Tim Burton movie. It's in the circus. There's a witch. There's this, you know, it goes all over. And so it's like, okay, how do we make these stories come to life on stage in a unique way in the Spire Center? So that was all kind of part of the mix as we went into it.
What is it about Edward that you like this character to become Edward Bloom?
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy. I mean, in the movie, he's played by two different people, but in our production, it's played by the same guy. So I'm playing the teenage version of Edward that is running through the swamp, and then I'm playing the older version of Edward who has a kid and is struggling with his family. So it's really fun to get to play that full arc and the full spectrum of it. But He's a storyteller. He's a zany guy. He's super charismatic, and a lot of the stories come from his point of view, so they're a little bit biased, perhaps, but they're very much larger than life. And he wants to connect with his son, and the father-son relationship there is hits very close to home for me, and so it's a really fun and really important story, I think, to tell. And then also, he loves life. He loves making friends. He's, like, never met a person that didn't end up becoming his friend. And so it's super cool to get to explore those relationships with all the different actors. I have a scene with pretty much everybody in the cast at some point where we get to do some fun, crazy stuff together. So
it was Big Fish itself, the Tim Burton, help me here. Was it a musical? Or was it a straightforward movie?
It was actually a book originally, and then a movie. The musical came later. Yeah, the musical came later. Originally directed and choreographed by Susan Stroman on The Great White Way, it came out later. They thought it would be fun for theater.
So talk to me as a director. Mm-hmm. What is your, when you're looking at, okay, this is what we're going to do with Big Fish. What is your, how do you process a production like this, and how do you put your interpretation on it and try to put that forth in blocking to your actors?
That is such a good and complicated question. I think what I try to do is keep, you know, I go with a central theme. I try to figure out, like, either a central theme or an image, a central image that kind of encapsulates the whole show, and I doggedly hang on to that. You know, and I try to make sure every scene is moving in that direction to kind of illuminate the theme and some of the other themes as well that are in the show. Really try to work so those pop up. But I will say, so much ends up being, you're a traffic cop. You're just trying to make sure that the audience knows where to look when and that people are not running into each other on stage. And so that combination of things is kind of how we end up balancing the practicals so that people know where to look so the story gets told. At the same time, trying to keep this greater theme and how does every line, what are certain words that need to pop out? You know, I talk to the actors about that. And I find the actors, what they really want to do is they want to just tell the story well. And so they just look for any help that they can from myself and from each other. And I try to get out of the way and let them work with each other. And that's where the magic ends up happening.
How often do you have an actor say to you, I kind of see my character being like this. Are you somebody that's flexibility if someone wants to kind of flex the muscle of the character in a certain direction?
Oh, yeah. A hundred times I would rather an actor make a choice and just go with it. And then, you know, if we need to adjust or talk or figure that out, then, yeah, I mean, that's an easy conversation rather than me kind of dictatorially saying, no, that's wrong right off the bat. I mean, that stifles creativity more than anything. So if somebody, even if they play a scene differently than the way I blocked it, I'm like, no, yours is, usually the actors are better than my stuff. So I'm happy to follow their impulses and let them do their thing. And then little by little, we kind of craft it together to where it needs to go.
Talk to me, Nick, about Derek and his director. How is he as, like, I mean, again, you already talked about him being a teacher. How is it different as him being the director and someone who's giving you direction but yet giving you enough leeway that if you want to kind of, you say, I kind of feel that in this scene, I think that Edward should be doing this.
Yeah, the first thing about him is that he's also a choreographer. So he's a big dancer, and so movement and...
Is he a triple threat?
He for sure is.
Really?
Yeah, you should hear him sing, too.
Wow. We may test that in a few minutes.
Derek.
He's unprepared. Go ahead, continue. I apologize.
So a lot of the, even just like simple blocking scenes, there's like an elegance to it that you can tell. It's all woven in with the dances and everything, so it's really cool to see that. But he does give a lot of freedom to his actors. There will be times in a scene where something's going on, and we'll kind of ask a question of like, hey, what do you think this moment is, or how do you think this is happening? And he'll give a little thoughts and he'll go, what do you think? You know, and he'll ask us to give justifications and reasons. And a lot of times if something goes differently than the way it was intended, he just wants to know, do you know why that happened? And do you believe that that's the way that it should happen? And then he'll let us run with it until it either works great or doesn't work. And again, we go back to the drawing board and find something else. But he's very collaborative.
Okay. And I will tell you, I ask you a lot of this through my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. I've done a little bit of theater. Community theater is exactly that word. Community. Mm-hmm. Is fantastic. And knowing that there is a plethora of theater companies on the South Shore, sure, you can go to Boston. You can pay the hefty prices to go to dinner and park. Mm-hmm. But there are some real bona fide stars here on the South Shore, including at the Americana Theater Company. I'll throw out some information out real quick here. And that is, again, starting this Thursday, July 13th, is when the curtain goes up at the Spire Theater, the Spire Center for the Performing Arts. Remember, that's in downtown Plymouth. If you have any questions, you want to get tickets, I believe you can purchase them online. Derek, what is the web address?
It's AmericanaTheater.org, and that's theater with an R-E.
Yes. Or you can call 508-591-0282. Again, I know you didn't have your pencil ready. 508-591-0281. So my next question is that there's always a process, and there's usually some kind of a sticking point in every production where it's like, it's almost, it takes right up until opening night for one particular scene to kind of hit its stride. Have you had that in this getting ready for Thursday night?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's so funny. I think I agree with you. There's the one scene. Sometimes I think they're all the scenes they could get hitting their stride as we're getting ready. Yes, there's a couple. The ending is so important, and that's the one that we are really working to craft
right
now.
You got to stick the landing on that.
Got to stick the landing.
Stick the landing.
Exactly. So that's the one that we're working on. There's another one when we go to the circus. It's such a different, fun, unique vibe, and we're just kind of, we're landing that and trying to figure out how do we make the circus come out of basically... it's a kid's bedroom that then explodes into a circus. So those are the two we're working on.
What is it as far as when it comes to, you have multiple sets that you have to, or is it a constant set that is, you may make adjustments?
You know, I knew that you were involved with theater. You are asking all of the right questions, and you know all the lingo. It is actually, it's a unit set with pieces. There's pieces that come in and out.
Yep.
So that it has a central kind of location feel to it. And then with lighting, we're really able to craft all the different, you know, so they're in a Chevy. Well, is it a Chevy? You know, do we bring a Chevy out on stage? And a 57 Chevy? No. It's like, no. It's a, you know, all of a sudden it's going to be, it's two chairs that get lit a certain way and the actors play and it becomes that. So that's kind of how we create the world.
What has it been like for you, Nick? I mean, you have some favorite scenes already that you look forward to, or do you burst down in song at certain points? Are there certain musical numbers that you like to do and that, you know, that the folks are going to want to hear?
Yeah, I definitely have a couple of favorite scenes. The circus is a real fun section. It's super active. I'm running around everywhere, as is everyone else that's on the stage. But there's just a lot of fun, weird, zany moments that happen in that section. There are also some really, really powerful, hard-hitting songs. The first number is really fun, and there's just a choreography piece that pretty much every actor in the show does together on stage that I just, it's one of my favorite parts. There's also, selfishly, there's a duet near the end of the show in the second act that I get to sing with a friend of mine and a fellow castmate that is just super powerful, super hard-hitting. Again, for anyone with a significant father-son relationship, it's going to be a tearjerker, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are kind of winding down. We got a few minutes left here. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon in regards to this upcoming performance if folks want to find out more? Derek?
Well, I think if they want to find out more, the website really is the best way to just get some basic information about it. You know, the tickets, you know, are $35 for general admission, $30 for like seniors and students, things like that. the show times, you know, I'm just going through the basics, 7 o'clock on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday.
Good.
So, and we close on the 30th, which means usually that day is our most full day when everyone goes, oh, I should have got a ticket. So that'll be the final Sunday. I think that if people, one of the things they need to know is like, I think this time of the year, they want to be entertained, you know, and this has a lot of fun, dancing, surprises. But then I really agree with Nick, this father-son, that's not just about the father-son, it's about communication and it's about telling family stories, like passing down a story from father to son, from family to family member. Listen, we're in an area where there's very large families, the Irish and the Italian family. I grew up in a big Irish family, Irish Catholic family. And so there's a lot of stories that get passed around, and those stories are part of who we are. So I think people will get moved and we'll have a great time doing it.
Nick, anything you want to leave? Anything we haven't discussed, or any stone we haven't turned over that we need to discuss in regards to this performance of Big Fish?
I just think it's a really beautiful story, and the production side of it and the actor side of it, the people that we have really care about the story as well, and I think are really excited to show this to the community that we have. I agree with Derek. It's not just about a father and a son. It really is about the whole family, and even the found family, the people that get added on to the family, and how the story kind of affects them all, and how just Edward as the character was this larger than life person and this legacy that he left. So I just think it's a beautiful story for people to see with their families, with their friends. I think it hopefully will become a memory that they end up telling, because it's just, it hits real hard, and I think it touches on a lot of beautiful things. So if you have the chance, you should definitely come see the show and bring tissues if you can.
I would ask each of you, both bigger fans of musicals than straight performances, or it doesn't matter what the straight performance is for you to choose over a musical?
I feel, as a theater professor, I would be a bad person to say it was one over another. But I will say, I am generally a huge fan of the musical, but I would agree with you. There are certain theater productions and theater stories, like, you know, I mean, I've done The Crucible, I've done some Greek theater, Shakespeare, that, but it's specific ones, not all of them, it's specific, but musicals have always lived in my heart.
What would you say, whether it's something you performed in or something that you saw, what would you say is probably one of your all-time favorite performances you've seen? It doesn't matter where it is. It doesn't matter if it's somewhere on the South Shore, Boston, or beyond.
Well, you know what? A few years back, I didn't get to see this in New York, but I did see it in Boston. It was Once, the musical, in Boston, the touring group. And I just think that show, we're going to do it at some point. That's one of my favorites. That was so great and powerful and beautiful. And so that was one of the all-time favorites that I have seen. And it's few and far between, sadly, because I've just seen so much. But that one really moved me.
Okay. How about you, Nick?
Oh, man. He said one that he saw. I'll try and do the other one that I was in, but that Derek also directed. We did Treasure Island, which is just, you know, based off an amazing, amazing book. And so it was a lot of fun sword work, a lot of beautiful set work. And Derek directed and fight choreographed that one as well. So that's probably one of my favorite productions that I've ever gotten to be a part of.
Probably one of my favorites was Guys and Dolls. Guy named Bill Cunningham did it at the Orpheum Theater, and he had a way to cast it where Big Jules was a little guy, but he had a big character. And this was many, many years ago. Still, to this day, I've seen many performances, but that one still sticks out of my mind because the cast was impeccable. So, again, gentlemen, Derek, Nick, thank you so much for joining us. Guys, gals, get out and check out Big Fish. And I would implore you, if you're going to do an evening show, try to maybe take a couple of hours earlier and grab something to eat in downtown Plymouth. Grab something to eat and head on over to the show. If you're doing the matinee on Sunday at 2 o'clock, fantastic. You can do that as well. So keep that in mind. Again, more information, Americana Theater Company. You want AmericanaTheater.org is the website. And you can call 508-591-0282 is the number. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for this final segment.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you guys for tuning in to Monday Night Talk every week. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a good night.
KTV-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton.